it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Behringer, I buy Cabernets, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 87. This week, we feature President and CEO of Duckhorn Wines, Alex Ryan.
Duckhorn Wine takes its name from its original owners, Dan and Margaret Duckhorn. And from there, the Waterfowl family grew to include Goldeneye, Paradux, Migration, Decoy, and Canvasback. Today, President and CEO Alex Ryan guides the company into the future. We caught up with Alex at the Duckhorn Winery in Napa Valley to talk about history, the future, and conversations in a pizza parlor.
Ray, what can I do for you today?
Well, let's talk. We are with Alex Ryan. And Alex, you are the president and CEO of Duckhorn Wines.
Yeah.
And we should say all the Duckhorn brands, correct?
The whole Duckhorn waterfowl portfolio.
Right, which would be, and I'm going to name them off, which would be Goldeneye, yes, and Paradux,
yes,
Decoy,
yes,
and of course, Migration.
Migration, Duckhorn, and a lesser known one called Canvasback.
Canvasback, I remember
which
that.
Which will reemerge itself in the future. And in years past, we've even done some fun things called King Eider. There was a period in our life when we thought the world wanted some premium dry vermouth. Yes, there were, believe it or not, and this would have been 1997, 98, 99, and we thought we'd capture the market.
Wow.
And it was the most wonderful product in the world, and it was tasted great, and it was a beautiful package called King Eider, representative of the King Eider duck that rests on ice floes in the North Pacific. And what we found is people who love vermouth like to buy one bottle their entire life.
Yeah.
Therein lies the problem.
That whole idea of the return business would be sort of
lost. Yeah, that's a long-term venture.
Yeah, real long-term.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you get their children and their children's, they bequeath the bottle.
Yeah, maybe half the bottle.
So there's, as always, I have a whole bunch I want to talk to you about, and you and I met officially.
We stumbled on one another in a local restaurant.
Right, which was great.
Yeah.
And then got a chance to talk again, mm-hmm, at Auction Napa Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your whole wine background. I mean, how you ended up finding your way into the wine business.
It was the most fortuitous meeting of my life. I moved here with my parents in about 1975 to San Leon, Napa Valley. My dad had taken a job as part of a management team that recently ran Behringer after the Behringer family had sold to Nestle, one of the first big M&A deals of the wine country. And I went to school in fourth grade and met a young kid named John Duckhorn, Dan and Margaret Duckhorn's middle kid. We became fast best friends, are still to this day. And I got, you know, it was a fortuitous meeting, to say the least. I was able to meet Dan and Margaret Duckhorn as parents of my friend. This is prior to the winery being established. Developed a great relationship. The winery got established. I was now in my formative years of high school. I fell in love with wanting to learn how to make wine. I went to Europe with my parents for several weeks, kind of got introduced to the German, Italian, and French wine markets during a business trip for Behringer that he was doing at the time. Came back and fell in love with it. Started working for Dan Duckhorn in 1981. An old girlfriend's father taught me how to make wine. I did that through college. And the rest became somewhat history. Dan called me back getting close to when I was going to graduate from college and said, you know, this business is really taking off. People are really buying Merlot. They're buying into the Napa Valley premium wine business. This would be about the mid-80s. People are getting excited about the whole process. And you know, Margaret and I, his then wife, Margaret Duckhorn, said, we're running out of hands. And let's try something new. I said, think of a salary. Get out of college and come on up. I studied viticulture, got a degree in viticulture. We came up, Dan recently started buying vineyards at the time. I got a chance to jump out of the books into the vineyard business and started to manage the vineyards. We bought several properties, developed them. The rest is kind of history. The only thing I would suggest that's fortuitous of this whole thing is I remember the day I graduated from high school, Dan, as my best friend's father, said, come by the winery, say hi, tell me what you want to do. Just what a good friend's father would do. Mm-hmm. And something flopped out of my mouth that I wasn't even prepared for. I said, what do you want to do with your life? And I looked at him and took about 4 seconds. I said, I want your job. Hmm. And it wasn't well thought out. It was kind of a silly thing for an 18-year-old kid to say. 30 years now, looking back, how funny is that? Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's been a wonderful run. I was given the opportunity to run vineyard operations, winery operations, really grow with the winery. And as I've developed the winery in latter years, as I kind of took over, I can't honestly stay with passion that I'm somewhat bullshit proof. There aren't many jobs here I haven't done, from flipping burgers and plunging toilets to the fun stuff. And we all roll up our sleeves here pretty well, and that's how Dan and Margaret Duckhorn did it. And we as a culture follow that role. We are hands-on people. And hands-on winemakers, hands-on brand experience, like we were talking earlier, hands-on about hospitality. We endeavor to get people to come visit us at the winery, share what we do here, be part of it, develop a relationship, develop a following, let us entertain you in our home, so to speak. We spend more time here than we probably do our own winery, our own homes.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, enjoy what we do in our own home is kind of our unwritten policy. And we see about all of our three wineries, we'll probably see upwards of 90,000 people a year face-to-face. That's just a face-to-face visitation, notwithstanding web connections and internet connections and club connections and things like that. It's a dream come true. I don't work a day in my life, but I get paid.
Exactly. And as we were talking about before, it's the idea of being able to, you know, have passion and love for what you mm-hmm. do every day. One thing I've always been fascinated by, especially when you look at a number of the brands in the Valley and maybe even in the wine business, this idea of, number one, the waterfowl, which of course is directly connected mm-hmm. to Dan's name. But then mm-hmm. you've got these very individualistic labels. Yeah. Duckhorn yeah. is its own
right.
entity, its own world. Paradox, you know, which was how I discovered you.
Yes.
Very unique brand and amazing, amazing wine. Goldeneye, totally different concept. You've got the Anderson right. Valley connection going on there. And then you have Canvasback and of course, Decal, and et cetera, Migration. Does that really present a bit of an issue when you're trying to market this? Because you are, I know you're not trying to be all things to all people, but you kind of are fairly spread out.
The waterfowl theme wasn't a Harvard Business School paper we did. The passion for ducks was led by Dan and an interesting tie-in to his last name. It evolved into a marketing theme. The waterfowl theme evolved. We started with Duckhorn Vineyards. We made a second label called Decoy. This is early on back in the 80s. And things evolved. Just to clarify how we went that route versus any other route, we had some wonderful discussions at the board level early on. We could have named a Pinot and a Zinfandel and all the other wines we do Duckhorn. And that probably would have been a quicker route to market mm-hmm. for us. And probably a number of different arguments for that particular route. Or we could have diversified. And in our business, an agricultural business, a high-end consumer products, which the wine business, diversification is really your only defensive mechanism in this business. Diversified fruit locations, diversified varietals, diversified customer base, what have you. So diversify the brands. Instead of being the jack of all trades, Duckhorn makes all these varietals. Let's specialize. You know as well as I do, in this industry, people love two things. The image of smallness or smallness itself, mm-hmm. smaller is better. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to agree with that, but it is a theme and we must understand that. And specialization. I'm not sure a guy drinking his Chateau Margaux wants to know that winemaker also makes a great rosé of Zinfandel in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Not that great rosés in South Africa aren't great, but he doesn't want his Chateau Margaux winemaker making it. So if you believe those concepts, that specialization and smallness is important, if you want to grow and expand and challenge your employee group, offer your customers new choices, you have two routes, the brand that works or develop new brands. Now, developing new brands, for the sake of developing new brands, is a tough proposition. The waterfowl theme was the how we linked the two together. Let's develop new brands, but keep it under a family. Keep it under a reason to being. There's some practical applications there too. When your salesperson goes out to the market, there's a reason that he or she has a bunch of waterfowl brands that are supported by individual wineries, supported by individual appellations, and supported by individual winemakers who really house the image of those brands. So you have a story of legitimacy, you have an authentic story of legitimacy behind those different brands, but they're tied with a family, they're tied with a theme, and that's, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but for our company and the way we market our wines, it's been incredibly powerful. So if you find a high quality West Coast United States wine brand, Anderson Valley, Sonoma County, Napa Valley, or maybe elsewhere on the West Coast, there's a good chance that sign of quality, that sign of commitment, that price-value relationship that people expect for luxury tier wines is probably one of the Duckhorn Wine Company products. And it's really fit together well that way. The specialization on each brand having its own focus on a specific varietal that does well in a specific appellation supported by a specific winemaker. And that's not to say good Pinot Noir winemakers can't make great Cabernet. Mm-hmm. But what I really wanted is a great Pinot Noir maker to make great Pinot Noir year after year, and the Cabernet guy allowed to make great Cabernet year after year, and focus on their brands, and maybe a little internal competition. It's fascinating. It's interesting to see the winemakers kind of react when the others get different scores, good scores, bad scores, medium scores, or reviews and write-ups and things like that. It's a fascinating group of professionals to see artisans, winemakers, that I'm trying to make into businessmen, and they're fighting me trying to stay artisans. It's fascinating to see their competitive spirit, and it ultimately makes a better bottle of wine no matter what bottle they're making.
See, that'd be a great place to be, a fly on the wall when these guys get together.
I think I'm the elephant in the room, but a fly on the wall is better.
Yeah, elephant in the room. I go along with that. But you have Bill Nancaro, obviously for Duckhorn.
He's our winemaker with the most seniority here, and he's our executive winemaker and has kind of a mentoring effect on the other group. But he came through the ranks of Paradox, mm-hmm. and has now ended up owning the reins of the Duckhorn Vineyards Bordeaux portfolio and centered here at Duckhorn Vineyards in St. Helena. Mm-hmm. And there's David Marchese, right. of Paradox, down in Yachtville. Really Zinfandel base and other creative eclectic blends, primarily from the Napa Valley. And we have Neil Bernardi, who you worked with harvest season, I think. Kind of a two hats, but focusing really on migration, Russian River Valley Chardonnays and Russian River Valley Pinot Noirs from the great Appalachian, cool climate Appalachian of Russian River Valley, and focusing on those two varietals in some larger blends and then some site-specific bottlings. Michael Fay, a recent addition to the flock, if you will, is the winemaker, and he came from, I believe it was a Byron, down the Central Coast, specializing in Pinot Noirs, recently came to us, and makes the Goldeneye Pinot Noir up in Anderson Valley.
And as I understand it, Zach Rasmussen has moved up in the company.
He was our original winemaker at Goldeneye and wanted to expand his wings. And there was an internal opportunity to move to a chief operating officer, COO position. We went far and wide because he was such a great winemaker. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say this, but I didn't want to lose him at that juncture. But he earned the right, earned the position, moved up. And we were able to replace him and better. I wouldn't tell him, this isn't going to be public.
Nobody will hear this.
He replaced himself with better, which is the true testament of a great manager is to replace yourself with someone better than you are. I've been learning that too in my executive team. Everyone there on that thing's smarter than I am. It's very, very hard to wake up in the morning and go to work because I got to deal with all these people a hell of a lot smarter than I am.
I know. It kind of keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But one thing about Zach, I'll say for myself, for my period working mm-hmm. with him and Neil, was he's an exceptional leader. He's got the personality for it, but he's got the get up and go, and he's got all those elements that come together. He was a total pleasure to work for, both from a winemaking point of view and just from being a good human being.
You bring up a good point. What's interesting, and some of your listeners might be interested in this, you can be a technically trained winemaker and go to all the right schools, UC Davis, Fresno, San Luis Obispo, Cornell, could be anywhere, right? And you can be a trained technical winemaker with all the proper credentials and background, or you can be a learn-on-the-job winemaker. We have a combination of both. Zach happens to be a learn-on-the-job winemaker. He wasn't formally trained in it, and he's just as good. Not to take anything away, but there is a technical side, and then there's a passionate side, an experience-based side to this art, this business, and this art. And you could come at it, especially in the area of winemaking, from both sides. And we have a blend of the two, and I think at the end of the day, the blend of the two in terms of ideas or creativity or interaction amongst the group, either the entire employee group or the winemakers themselves or working in the vineyards, the two ways in which the winemakers became winemakers add incredible depth mm-hmm. to our experience base within the company.
Well, from my point of view, you have these, a couple of guys there that I would call are more the practical side of mm-hmm. things, and then you have some that are more the scientific side. As an example for me, talking to Neil, mm-hmm. he is a classic scientist. You know, definitely humanitarian. I mean, he's a real guy, but he just is so much about the soil, so much about how this all comes together, and yet he has the ability to explain it to you without going over your head. That's rare.
And that's what makes a great winemaker. At the end of the day, nobody in the market wants to talk to anyone. They want to talk to a handful of people, the owner, the president, but that's less. They want to talk to the winemaker. If those three people are available, that's who the market wants to talk to.
Right.
And they're fascinating people, winemakers in general. This applies to any of them. Their ability to convey their art and their science of what they do at a humanistic level, over a glass of wine, over a meal, over a social engagement. That's why this business is fun. Everybody I hired in this company, I promised them only one thing. That's all I can promise you. You'll never be bored. but what they do display, and I think you were just touching on that, is passion. At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold. But if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work. People don't want to buy great. They want to buy great with a touch of passion.
It's not for everybody, really.
It is not.
This is the end of part one of our interview with Alex Ryan of Duckhorn Wines. Download part two from lifebetweenthevines.com or from iTunes.